ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Snell Nation. And it is our 50th episode. Yes, I know it's surprising. It just kind of jumped up on me out of nowhere, considering the long history this podcast has had. And by that, I mean about 8 weeks, 8 or 9 weeks. So this has been truly a pleasure thus far. And I'd like to take a moment just to thank all those that have provided their support, their constructive criticism, feedback, and a lot of the questions on different topics and people to discuss that you send to me. You know, please continue to push that information my way. It definitely helps with the evolution of this podcast. So yeah, thanks a lot. And with that, let's get into this. So it is June the 1st, 2020, and I'm seeing a lot of chatter about a particular moment in time, a very dark moment in our nation's history, which took place on May the 31st and June the 1st of 1921, and I'm talking about the Tulsa Race Massacre, also known as the Black Wall Street Massacre. And this was in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And this particular incident involved a mob of white residents that had weapons, even had, I believe, one or two private aircraft. And they attacked black residents and businesses and pretty much anyone who supported them as well, which resulted in the destruction of, I believe, over a dozen square blocks of just businesses and homes and, you know, and all that. And it was very, very horrific. The number of casualties, it tends to vary depending on which estimate you look at. There was a 2001 commission. They had an estimate between, one estimate, 75 to 100. Then another estimate, 150 to 300 casualties. Originally, the number they came up with was 36 total that were dead. And of those 36, 26 were black and 10 were white. All the estimates, there's a split where there's a chunk of whites that also died in the midst of all this. But when you look at a lot of the conversation about this, of course, there has to be the narrative that it just was all white people attacking all black people, and the black people were defenseless, and a bunch of black people died, and then that's it. White man bad, the end, move on. But like a lot of things in our history, it's a bit more complex than that. Just like when people talk about slavery, they think, you know, white man bad, black man victim, and then that's it. But as we all know, the story of slavery, or that history in this country, is a bit more complex. By that I mean there were Native Americans that owned slaves. There were blacks that owned slaves that came here, that came to this country freely and acquired black slaves. So it's not, you know, no pun intended, black and white. But this incident is incredibly dark and incredibly sad. But of course, the mainstream media and our politicians, as always, they use this as an opportunity to pander and placate and patronize. And of course, continue to maintain that wedge, you know, to keep us divided into our groups and split up, and only focus on our differences. Now, they'll have some wonderful speeches where they'll talk about the importance of unity and coming together, and, you know, and we have so much in common, but in their practice and in their actions, it's just about division, 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 and keep the race obsession alive for as long as humanly possible. You know, why? I mean, it's incredibly helpful to whatever their agenda is. It's incredibly profitable to a lot of the race hustlers that I've discussed in previous recordings. So you had just all these speeches, and of course, you know, I'm seeing all these promos for, you know, different shows that are highlighting the the destruction of Black Wall Street, you know, and by executive producer LeBron James and such, you know, and it's the usual shtick that we've become accustomed to. It's just like, you know, Black History Month, where there's just this focus and fixation on, you know, race for that entire month, and then it tends to bleed off into the months that follow. And there's so much focus on this, and I just find it fascinating how little interest and little time is devoted to another race massacre that happened quite recently. And, you know, whenever you talk about, you say black on black crime, and it activates people a lot of times to the negative. But these are strong numbers. These are numbers that are worth discussing. And the reality is, now this is from the FBI crime stats, you know, and I'm not all that thrilled about the FBI and their history. The same thing with the CIA. But these numbers are worth discussing. And this comes from 2018, 2019, and 22,600 black men in this country were killed by other black men. And that's been a baseline for years, a consistent trend for years. And I'm not talking 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I'm talking 10, 20, 30 years. And I don't understand, you know, or I should say, I understand the angle. It doesn't fit the narrative, so it has to be ignored. But why is it that just the masses can't see this for what it is? You know, we're talking over 2,000 people. 2,000 black people died at the hands of other black people. And, you know, you don't see anyone protesting this and holding the sign, you know, stop black genocide, like you see at the defund the police movements and a lot of the speeches and debates and things that you see come from Black Lives Matter and other adjacent organizations that support them. But you'll see people go on and on about an event that is relevant and is a part of American history. It's incredibly sad. You know, it's worth discussing. Don't get me wrong. But this fixation on it while ignoring a huge problem that dwarfs this and is incredibly recent. Recent as of now, right now. I mean, we've seen the numbers for all the shootings that are happening in Chicago and Atlanta and Philadelphia and, you know, New York City and Oakland and Detroit and all these other cities. And nothing. I mean, there's no A&E documentary about black on black crime. There's no special to discuss the 2,600 lives that were taken, black lives that were taken, since that seems to be the flavor right now, that were taken in 2018 and 2019. And if you go all the way back from 1976 forward and you do the numbers and you just go off of an average per year, the total number of casualties actually puts it closer to 300,000. 300,000 blacks that have died at the hands of other blacks, mostly male. And that's not worth discussing. That doesn't deserve a sign, stop black genocide. You know, that doesn't deserve a conversation on the main stage. But every time, you know, Juneteenth comes up or this Black Wall Street massacre comes up, it's everywhere. They beat you over the head with it. Black History Month, they beat you over the head with it. And now we have the mainstream media trying to bring the Asian community into it with the Stop Asian Hate. But that particular angle is problematic because a majority of the individuals that are attacking Asians in New York City and different places, incident after incident, tends to be black men. So they're the mainstream media and those special interests and the politicians are kind of put in quite the pickle. You know, how do you have your cake and eat it too? How can you work both angles? It's kind of tough. You don't have that magical video footage that they like to just shove down our throats, because that's a hard sell. you know, even though it's, you know, at this point in time, it's incredibly easy to manipulate a large group of people, especially in this country, especially with just with all the media tools and everything that are out there. But it's hard to get people on board with, you know, this type of agenda. If all you see are just black men attacking Asians, well, it makes it a bit difficult. It's not the usual white alt-right trope or whatever that they try to hang out there as the boogeyman of this particular decade. But it's just something that I always found interesting, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down. The race obsession presses on, and it's a continuous moneymaker. We saw it throughout 2020 with just hundreds of millions in dollars being funneled through BLM and BLM Incorporated and all those little organizations that fall under the umbrella, and people just sort of buy it. You'll see discussions about this Black Wall Street massacre, and people talk about it as if it happened yesterday. And we need new legislation. We need more, you know, adjustments to hate crime laws and hate crime protocols and all this stuff. And people go on and on. This is something that happened, you know, 100 years ago. Now, yeah, I think it's something that is a part of American history. It's something that should be discussed. It's something that should be taught in school, like a lot of things that aren't. But to fixate on something like this while ignoring a problem in the present that dwarfs this is something that just blows my mind. But we continue to press on. We had, you know, a lot of racially motivated, you know, attacks on people, you know, that throughout the 2020s, you know, so far, you know, I want to be hopeful. I really want to. But considering what we saw in 2020, and now here we are in 2021, we're halfway through, and we're still dealing with, you know, there's still the occasional riot that breaks out, the occasional, you know, racially motivated attack, whether it be someone black attacking someone Asian, or someone black attacking someone white for being white, or someone white attacking someone black. And, you know, we're so primed. I think that's the best word I can use to describe it. Because of all this focus on race, the dreaded race obsession in this country has become so strong that it has activated a tribalistic switch. And everyone is primed, or I shouldn't say everyone, but a majority of citizens in this country are primed to go in lockstep with whatever their racial group or, you know, whatever their identity group is that they're connected to. And then and that's why every time there's a protest, or most of the time there's a protest and it turns into absolute anarchy time and time again, because those individuals are primed, and then they go into their group, and all it takes is one person to throw a rock or break a window or whatever, and then all hell breaks loose. And then of course we have our mainstream media, and they'll do their part to, you know, push the agenda and make sure that they share the video that shows all the right angles to keep us stuck in this two-sided paradigm where it's this constant, you know, left versus right and all lives matter versus Black Lives Matter. And, you know, it's just the same old shenanigans. And just the them versus us. And ensuring that there are controls in place where any individual that strays outside of that approved social spectrum, you know, either you're on the left or you're on the right. Well, actually, I think there's something wrong with both of them. Well, you're a conspiracy theorist and you need to get out of here. And that's where we are. Like, you have to choose a side or you're against everyone. You know? it's something that I've seen in my time, in my interactions, my personal interactions with different groups and individuals, whenever there's a discussion and you talk about all the angles and people tend to get upset. Even when it comes to discussing this incident, this Black Wall Street massacre, Either you have to be very aggressive and very upset by it and disturbed by it, and you know, and how dare those white residents do that to those poor innocent black residents, you know, and I'm sure there's some that are on the other side of it. But what about those that are just looking at this incident holistically? You know, well, what role is the government playing all this? What were all the impacts that followed this incident? What was done to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again? What are some of the dangers with identity politics? And, you know, what were the politics at that time in the 1920s? You know, what role did that play? How about the local political officials? And I should say local, state, and federal level. You know, what was the president's take on this? Why was it possible for so many people to sort of hide this for decades? Because there have been plenty of other incidences that were incredibly tragic and horrific. And, you know, one thing that comes to mind would have to be those Japanese internment camps during World War II, where over 100, and I believe it was 170,000 Japanese American citizens were forced to leave all their businesses, their belongings, their homes, and bring their families and essentially stay in what equates to a concentration camp light edition. Which also, there were several casualties involved there that no one seems to want to really discuss. And that was something else that just wasn't really discussed in American history and in the public school system until in recent years, lightly discussed, like so many things. But I just think it's interesting, and I just, as always, you know, I highly recommend that people do their research, ask questions. You know, there's so much information out there, you know, and take the time whenever the mainstream media is pushing something, you know, always ask that question, just what's the angle? Because I guarantee you there's always an angle. I mean, where we are now, I mean, we've got, I would say, about 92 to 95% of our intake of information, you know, through social media, through mainstream media, all these news networks, even the little bit of print media that still exists, you know, 92 to 95% of that is dominated by 5 to 6 corporations in this country. And if you don't think there isn't some sort of agenda that's being worked there, then I don't think that you're being intellectually honest. Because it's all right there. So ask those questions, you know, and feel free to express your position, you know, whether it's approved or not. So with that, you know, enjoy the rest of your, let's see, what is it, Tuesday? Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. I know it's beautiful here in Columbus, Ohio, knock on wood. But enjoy the rest of your day. Snail Nation out.